Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hut in the Clock. Noon on Wednesday, so that means it is Hut in the Clock. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow joins us now. Hutton, we've got OTAs today. Titans are out on the practice field now. We'll hear from Brian Callahan in about an hour or so, give or take. Hutton, how much do you care about OTAs?
You know, I don't really. Starting out, I did. I thought every snap mattered. Let me tell you, did anyone at all reference OTAs or minicamp for the Kansas City Chiefs when they went back-to-back? The answer is no. Same will be said for the Tennessee Titans last year. We didn't reference anything about OTAs and minicamp when they ended up firing Mike Vrabel. So while they're getting acclimated to a new coach and a new practice regimen and learning the mannerisms, more or less, this is about pushing a sled around because of what's in the collective bargaining agreement. And what the players are going to try to negotiate moving forward is that they don't want anything to do with this time of year. So they don't think it matters either. It matters more for the fans because we clamor and we crave football. That's great. But, you know, if the biggest news is who's there and who's not, to me, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it that way. And for the most part, I think, it's like as long as nobody gets hurt in,
yeah,
in this whole fiasco that's going on, the OTAs, then that's all that I really care about. Now, they're not hitting anybody. They don't have on helmets. Well, I think they do now, but they don't have on pads.
You can barely go one-on-one.
Exactly.
You can barely go one-on-one.
It's just really a sort of hyper walkthrough. That's what it is, because you can't touch anybody, you know. So.
And hey, it's beneficial to learn the offense,
yes,
right? To, you know, visual learner versus, you know, how I wanted to do everything. If I'm taking notes, I want to actually read it aloud, you know, like, so I get it. You want to go through the process of this. It's important with the new coaching staff. Maybe you got a rookie quarterback. Will Levis is, in this case, learning the new system. You want to get around that, right? But I mean, it's voluntary, and that also plays a factor. And you know, the attendance report is what just bugs me, because it's more about which guys are inside versus which guys are on the field. I mean, that's cool, but if Jeffrey Simmons is getting a snap right now, I'm not sure it's going to factor into how he plays in September.
The only alarming thing to me, Hut, would be. And there's exceptions to certain things. Like if it was Vrabel and guys, you know, a few veteran guys were not here, I don't care. I mean, it is
right,
what it is. But because it's not Vrabel as a new head coach, I expect everybody to be in that building because it's very imperative that the coach and you get to build this chemistry that you're going to need. So if veterans not showing up now, that's just a total disregard. And I don't think it's happening. I think all the veterans have showed up. Everybody pretty much showed up unless there's been like an issue or a family deal. But
right,
this is the time where you need to come if you're a veteran with a new head coach. If you are not excused and you just say, well, I'm not coming because it's OTAs, it's not mandatory, then I may question having you on my team.
Right. And you know, there are exceptions to the rule, yeah, for certain things. You know, contracts come into play this time of year as well. But, you know, it doesn't like upset me that OTAs are going on. But I don't want to put these practices, quote unquote, I don't even hesitate to call them a practice.
Yeah.
Like you said, a walkthrough on a pedestal and overvalue them because coaches want more off-season work, but the same coaches hold a dizzy bat race for the final OTA of offseason. So, I mean, like, if you want to work, you've got these practices, go ahead and do it. They want more padded practice opportunities. A lot of coaches don't even use all their padded practice options in the regular season. So, yeah, I mean, I don't try to play into that as much as others will. And if you're a fan and you want more info, I think the biggest thing is which players are they making available to speak? You know, there's a pool, there's a vote for players post practice on which players are going to speak to the media. That's who you're hearing from. You're not hearing to an open locker room. So, like that's where it's valuable this time of year because you haven't heard from anyone that's a holdover. Mm-hmm. And last year, what the retention, the roster turnover was 40%, and you know, it's probably more than that this year. You want to learn from these new guys. You want to get to know them a little bit. It's hard to do that when you only have access to 3 to 6 players.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton discussing the Tennessee Titans and everything that's going on with this team in particular. Hutt, we talked about Will Levis and his age because we compared it to his draft class. Some of these guys are much younger. I don't think no one's older than him. But then you look at, you know, well, Hendon Hooker is a little bit older than him. But then you look at this year's draft where all these guys are young. Is it imperative that the Titans find out this year whether Will Levis is the guy or not? Because he's not a 22-year-old, which you would think second year, 22, maybe 23. He's not that. So the time is clicking. What clock is ticking on Will Levis. So is it imperative that they find out whether he's the guy this year or not?
Sure. I mean, you've got Callahan and what he said to Albert Breer, which I'm sure we'll get into. Mm-hmm. We know there's a certain moments in last season that Callahan believes that Will Levis can be the guy that has the traits, not just to be a good, but a great quarterback. We should see more of that. And I think it's more about honing that in, Mace, this mm-hmm. year to determine if he's the guy instead of just letting it rip all over the field and taking so many chances. I think that also plays a factor. You know, maybe we don't see as many deep shots. Maybe we do. Maybe we don't. But maybe he takes the tight end in the flat or one of the running backs in the flat instead of, you know, on first down going for the bundle, right? Like those are steps in the process that lead you to that good to great level. And here's the other factor. I think they'll have a good sense of who Will Levis is after this season. Will Levis is still, to me, the likely quarterback next year, meaning 2025, because of the contract situation. And you wouldn't just dump that player. I mean, at minimum, he's on the roster. So he's factoring in more than just this one season, unless it just hits the fan, unless there's a detrimental injury or it just isn't going to work out. Which I doubt happens. I think the worst case scenario isn't that he's not the guy. Mm-hmm. I think the worst case scenario is you don't know if he's the guy. And I believe come December, by the end of December, they'll have a good sense of who he is and maybe even better who he's not. And it's up to this offensive coaching staff to get the most out of who he is and not ask him to be who he's not. I think that's the other leading factor here. We'll have a good sense of what Callahan's about too as a head coach.
I think this is a great philosophical discussion because it gets into how much of it should age factor into. We just made the comparison, Hutt, as and D-Mates just referred to it. By the end of Mariota's age 24 season, he had 3 full seasons as the starter. Just a few games for injury.
Right.
But he had 3 full seasons under his belt. Well, whereas Levis at the same age only has the 9 games that he played last year. So what should be a more fair way to track his development? Reps and games, or do you have to factor in his age? That I think that goes a long way to your evaluation of him after this season. Because I agree with you. You'd hate to have to pull the plug after just one full year as the starter, but he is a little bit older than some starting quarterbacks that come into the league.
I think it's the age factor. To me, Willie, is more about the age of the contract now because they're protecting the quarterback more than ever. We're seeing more and more quarterbacks play from 35 to 40 years old. It's just a different era of the QB that we're going into.
Yes.
Because you're not supposed to hit them. So with that in mind, if you keep him upright, if you don't have an offensive line the way they did last year, and you invest there, they should be okay there. The age of the contract. So next year, not this year, but next year, he would be after year 3. You don't have the 5th-year option on him, so you have the option to extend him at that point. Mariota, after year 3, you could either extend him, which we've seen some quarterbacks receive after year 3, most recently last offseason, or you have another year where you're trying to figure out if you're picking up the 5th-year option. So there are decisions to be made at that point that factor into the age of the quarterback and so on. I don't think right now the age, he's not Hendon Hooker to where he's entering the league at 25 years old. And he's also not the youngest quarterback like we saw with Anthony Richardson. He's I think he's more or less in that regard in the sweet spot, where you have a guy who's played, got plenty of reps in Kentucky, and now comes in the league after starting his first start against the Atlanta Falcons. Now he gets an opportunity with an offensive coach to kind of put it all together. And I don't think you're worried about him hitting the age of 30 yet. You're worried about, okay, are we going to level up to the point where we want him to hit the age of 30 with us? And that's the ultimate goal. I don't know if it's as much of, okay, we got to figure it out now because we need to abandon ship. I think you have to keep it afloat. And that's maybe more important, is just making sure that you're not taking on water.
Yeah. If they could reach a second contract and they want to sign him to the second contract, that would be a good sign that he's made it part of the way. That's the scary part, this age thing about Lamar Jackson, is he's only 26. Right. He's going into his age 27 season, and he's already had six full years in the league.
And two MVPs. And
two MVPs.
That's crazy.
So he got in early at age 21 and, you know, went 7-1 or 6-1, taking over as they phased out of Flacco and onto Lamar, and then the rest is history.
Well, that's a different conversation with Lamar, though, because he's going to run around a lot.
Yeah.
You can hit him. He can take some shots. The rules are stacked against the defense if you stay in the pocket or behind the line of scrimmage as a QB, as a thrower. So, again, I do think it's just a 10 years ago, I'm worried about the knee injuries. I'm worried about the ankle. You know, the different problems that quarterbacks are facing. Now that they should feel great after a game. More often than not, given the fact that if you do get hit, you're going to be bruised up after a big lick, but you're probably going to get a first down off of it. And as long as you don't get up woozy, you stay in the game.
Yeah, that's another thing with Levis that he'll have to learn is,
that's right,
as we saw, he can play a little reckless. He's got to watch that sure if he wants to be playing at 30 and not be a shell of what he has been physically. Hutt, another thing that we got into yesterday that I think you would be interested in. D. Mace looked at an article and we discussed it in The Athletic. They broke down all of the AFC receivers. They got into deep analytics on all of them. And one thing that stood out on Ridley and Hopkins, and this is again a question of the variables. How much does the quarterback have to do with it? Both of them, when they caught the ball, good things happened. But there were a lot of passes that did not connect for one reason or another. They had two different categories. One was just flat out, how many times do I throw it to you? How many times did you catch it? Another one weeded out the throws that they deemed uncatchable. Like if I'm throwing to D-Mace and I know I got to get rid of it. For whatever reason, he may be open, but I can't get it to him. I'm just chucking it out of bounds to avoid a sack or whatever. They weeded those out. But even with that, Ridley last year with the Jaguars and D-Hop with the Titans last year, they scored pretty low. So there was a lot of plays that didn't go anywhere. So how do we figure in, you know, the fact that it was a messy year for the Titans and the Jags had a very up-and-down year with Trevor Lawrence? It wasn't his best year. Or do we worry about that going forward with those two receivers? How can they get better in those areas? Because I'm sure Brian Callahan is thinking, I've got to get more efficiency from those two.
I think to get efficiency from those two, you have to get efficiency from Chigakonkwo and the two running backs out of the backfield, because then you have to defend this offense in a different way. And you can use the running backs in a much different way. You can deploy them in a different way than what we've seen in previous seasons. So if you're pulling defenders in opposite directions, Levis is set to put it in the breadbasket. Is Mace still there? Mace?
Yes.
What do you consider a catchable football? Because if we're going to read Willie's talking about analytics, and I think I'm intrigued here too. The radius of Marvin Harrison Jr., right? Mm-hmm. Like a catchable football for him is way different.
Oh, that's a good point. Yes. I don't know how.
That's why the variables are different. My thing is, regardless whether you are, 5'8" or 6'4", if it's within the radius of your body of catching a football. And listen, I'm not talking about between, double coverage. If you're double covering somebody, they just throw it up. I'm not talking about that, because you more than likely, that's a 50-50 ball. But if you're just talking within the radius of my body, those to me are deemed catchable balls. balls that you that hit your hand or balls that are within that radius of you catching it and you don't catch it, then to me that's deemed a catchable ball.
I do think it's probably subjective. I would like to know when they do that stat. I forget they said what it was in the article. True Sports. I mean, there's some company that they had. What are the parameters, and does it depend on how tall the receiver is and that kind of thing? What factors go into it?
Here's what I do know, Willie. No matter what version of those receivers Will Levis has, it is a far better version than what he had. Right? So the offense should take a big step forward.
Totally.
No matter what happens there. And based on the way the offense it should work, I mean, I was listening to Kaharsky discuss the observations of Tyler Boyd. I mean, just your typical slot guy, stop and go. And if Levis gets on the same level as him, and I think that's the key, can Levis step up and make the tight window throws on 3rd and 9 for the 12-yard completion? He has a much, much better opportunity now that the receiver, if you put it on him, is going to make that catch. The Albert Breer piece with Callahan, the throw that Levis is making that Callahan's just raving about is right on Burks in between two guys, and Burks just lets it go through his hands. But that's a difficult throw and a difficult catch to make too, given where he is on the sideline. Like, Levis puts it there. The receivers now should be right in rhythm to make those catches in the tight zones just as much as Levis needs to put it on them.
And I think quote-unquote catchable ball could be subjective. I mean, the number of times I'm watching a game or highlights and I hear D-Mace's voice in the back of my head, gotta catch that.
Yeah.
Gotta catch that.
Yeah, his standard might be very different than our standard, right?
Totally. Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, I want to circle back to the quarterback conversation. It's funny to hear the national impression of not just Will Levis, but really, you know, the AFC South as a whole. So I want to hear your breakdown of it. How would you rank the four quarterbacks in the AFC South?
I mean, I don't know how it's hard to predict what year two is going to be like for C.J. Stroud, but I mean, he was exceptional last year. Mm-hmm. Levis, new coaching staff for him. There's a bit of an unknown there. I don't know why these rave reviews are coming out about Anthony Richardson when he's throwing against air in these practices right now, going back to our OTA discussion. And
no disrespect to Anthony Richardson, but thank you. Like, I don't know where this benefit of the doubt for Anthony Richardson is coming from that some other quarterbacks, Will Levis included, frankly, aren't getting.
Yeah, Levis is ahead of them in my mind there. If you're just talking quarterbacks and the perception of the teams, right now, Jacksonville is stacked with talent. It's about Trevor Lawrence putting it together. He in big moments has played okay, and he's also been really bad in big moments. The interceptions, when they got past the 50, when they got into opponent territory last year, some of these throws he's making across the field, trying to pinpoint the throw into, Calvin Ridley comes to mind, different areas of the field that we've seen Trevor Lawrence have a ton of success. He's throwing and he's being tricked into throwing into double coverage and he's getting picked off. He threw a lot of picks last year. And if they rein that in, they can win the division. I mean, they're that good on both sides of the ball. But I just don't – I mean, I've going back to what we see from Levis this year, I've seen now a lot of Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. And, you know, maybe he gets a red shirt year for what happened with Urban Meyer. Maybe he doesn't because he's a pro and he's been the anointed quarterback of the future since he was in high school. Whatever. The dude won and now he's not winning as much. And it's time to put it all together. And I just don't buy into it as much as I would have last year at this time. So I'm still taking Houston until I see Jacksonville go claim it. And while the Titans are improved, they're still another offseason away from being in that same conversation for me. And Indy's just an afterthought. And I think there's two teams that are worthy of playoff discussion and two others that are either on the fringe or not. And Indy was right in the thick of things too last year. Don't get me wrong. They're better than the Titans. I just don't see where all of a sudden you put a helmet on and you're throwing against air that everything's just great. I haven't really thought about Indianapolis since January, and I don't think anyone else has either.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutt, always appreciate you for stopping by. Thanks for your time today. We'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, I'll always enjoy this. Thank you so much, guys.
All right, appreciate it, Hutt.